Controversial.
Check out me and Paulie on the Peacock postgame show this week.
Yeah,
me and Paulie doing highlights. We're going to kick some butt. That'll be fun.
Looking forward to it.
He's subbing in. He's Trevor Siemian to Jameis Winston.
Are you saying we have the second worst passing offense in the league on
Sunday
night?
You're right. I could have came up with something better. That's right, baby. He's better than Trevor Siemian. That was plain disrespect. I got to come up with somebody better than that. But Paulie Burmeister, Chris Sims, Colt McCoy.
There we go.
That's a good one.
22 out of 26.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I like that. That's all right. I'm here with my fellow alum, Colt McCoy, today. Yeah. But what's up, man? It's good to see you. Chris Sims Unbuttoned, presented by Under Armour. We're going to hit everything that happened week 9. Maybe the craziest week of the year.
Man, oh, man.
It's up there.
Upsets.
In the conversation, right?
Jeez.
And Paulie and I, it's been like 10 hours since we talked about football. So we did the Peacock show together last night, the highlight show. We had a lot of fun doing that. So I feel like we're going to be able to dive into a lot of these conversations very seamlessly because we kind of know where we want to say and the themes of these games and should have some good thoughts.
In one way, that whole day yesterday, being here all afternoon, all evening, all night, was just a wonderful prep for what we do Monday.
I know.
I know the highlights.
Yeah.
I know what you think about them.
No doubt.
I know the storylines.
Right.
It is such a fun challenge to have there, being on Sunday, because you sit down, you're in that giant room, and 8 games come on,
right?
And the football fan in you is like, I've died and gone to heaven.
Yeah,
this is such a cool way to spend a Sunday. But then the pro is like, I've got to have a comprehension of all these games, and they're all going on at once.
Uh-huh.
It's all spinning around.
Yes,
it's a real skill to try and figure out how to keep an eye on all 8 and enjoy it.
Yeah,
but also know damn well, you have to know what happened in all 8.
Gotta know. Gotta
How do you
know.
Do it?
I mean, I write
What's
notes throughout. I write some notes. I try to keep it broad,
I saw you writing
too.
Up there, yeah.
Yeah, I do. I go with, like, a lot of stuff where I just, like, big picture thoughts of the game.
Yep.
To me, it's like one of those things where I'm not smart enough. I don't want to waste any brain on things that don't really matter.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I approach Sunday. Like, let's just get a feel for the game, write down some big plays. Oh, wait, you know, this team's running just seems like they're running the ball well today. Or it just seems like the short passing game is surgical. And I just make it that instead of, like, because I'm not going to see the details of, like, oh, they were playing this coverage and, you know, maybe on a few of the important plays. But
right.
I try to limit the things that don't make a difference and just focus on the bigger, broader pictures,
okay.
I guess, if that makes sense.
I will keep that in mind.
Yeah, it's not bad. You're going to miss a few things here and there.
Can't help it.
You can't help it. And sometimes you got to lean on Tony Dungy or Breeze because I may be watching 2 or 3 games. It's a big drive in those games. I'm trying to keep track. And then all of a sudden something big happens in another game that I've kind of lost track of. And it's like, hey, Drew, you know, wait, so what just happened on that drive? How'd they go down the field right there?
Right.
You know, they were on their own 15. How are they on the 5-yard line going in now?
Yeah.
You know, that's what you miss every now and then. You're like, what? How did I miss that? And they're like, well, they hit a screen and they hit a post and now they're there. And you're like, damn, I missed it.
And you're very vocal and you stand up and you watch that way. Like, I always know you're there
because
I can see you moving around and I can hear you. But, like, Tony's up there and it's like 3 hours later. Like, oh, Tony's there.
I know. He just
He's
sits
so
right
quiet
in front.
Watching. Drew's pretty quiet.
Yes. And I'm definitely the loud person in the room.
You're Chris.
I am. I'm Chris.
I don't know if you were loud. You're just animated and into it.
Yes, I am. I have to stand up a little bit. I have, you know, I don't get the front row seat that Breeze, Tirico, and Dungy get because they're big time. I'm in the second row.
You are in the second row.
I'm in the back row.
That's true.
Me and Bob Uecker. But, yeah, I just sit there. And, yeah, I got to stand up at certain points just because I get stiff. But I want to be able to, like, really see everything. So, yeah, I guess it's my nervous energy there. But either way, you know, we're here. Me and Paulie B going to be talking football. Chris Sims Unbuttoned, presented by Under Armour. And you lead it off. Where do you want to start this at?
We have so many different ways to go. But I think one thing, with all the unpredictability we had yesterday, the league certainly handed us a theme to follow there. 7 of the 12 games yesterday were won by the underdogs.
Wow.
Over half. And 5 of those underdogs were on the road. So let's begin. And we don't really have a label here. We're going to get to Damn Okay and give me the headlines and all that. But we're just going to hit some games right off the bat.
Let's just, like, real quick, if you don't mind, like, just before we do that. Like, I do think it's interesting with the underdogs, the NFL. Again, it's not college football. Everything's so close. I don't care if you're significantly better than a team that you're playing. You make a few mistakes, that game's going to be close. you know, again, this is not, you know, Alabama versus Northeast Louisiana State where
Notre Dame against Navy.
Right, where you can make seven mistakes and still go, well, we didn't even play good and we won by 25. Yeah. Like, that doesn't happen in the NFL. And then, hey, the other thing we're seeing, the road teams, right? I mean, I think this is one of the first times in the history of the NFL the road teams maybe have the better record than the home teams altogether.
Really?
It's up there. It's something like that.
What do you think of that?
It's interesting.
And again, it's not like college where home field advantage really means a lot.
I know. I think the aspect of just really the human psychology a little bit plays into these road game, just the little details of, hey, when you're on the road team, it's you against the world. It really is. All week, the practice, the crowd noise is pumping. You're just ultra-focused. Like, man, we got to go into this environment. It's going to be loud. We better be on our game. You get on the plane as a team. You know, you go to the team hotel. There's very little distractions. Yeah, a few guys might have an uncle or an aunt at the game, and they got to go see them in the lobby.
But you don't have your family and kids around.
You don't have that around.
Yeah.
Listen, that would be my answer.
Yeah.
I really, when I look at it that way, and I think because the crowd noise at practice and all that has become so commonplace, I think teams have gotten so used to it now, they're like, well, it's louder at our practice.
Yeah.
You know, I know there's 80,000 here, but the way they pump up the big speakers at our practice, it's actually harder to communicate there
than
here. And, you know, I think you're exactly right. When you're the home team, you know, there's a tendency, Saturday after the walkthrough, going to go sit on the couch and might have a bunch of family and friends there. And you are a little, then you might go to the team meeting that night and then try to go back home a little bit before you got to go back to the hotel. Let me go hang out with the kids for an hour and a half, 2 hours before I have to be back for bed check at the hotel. And to me, it's like little things like that where the other team's already in their room.
Yeah.
They're just sitting there. They're studying their playbook. You know, they're just thinking about the game. There's
it's all
no
ball
kids
on the road.
It's all ball on the road. So that would be my 2 cents. Sorry to kind of take us off track there.
I think Pete, and you can correct me, I think Pete just hit me with home teams are 65 and 70 this year.
That's right.
I was right.
I
had not heard that.
I know.
And I would not have guessed that.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It really is. Last year we had no fans. I know we saw improvement from the road teams, but this year it's continued and it is pretty impressive.
Well, that was nice of you to bring it up because we're going to hit a big game where the road team pulled off an upset.
Right.
Titans beat the Rams by double digits. Let's begin with the graphic here. The Titans as underdogs in each of the last 4 weeks, I believe. Yeah, 4 weeks in a row they've been underdogs, and 4 weeks in a row they've won. And big-time wins, Bills, Chiefs, Colts, and now at the Rams. And we were both excited last night to watch. I think for us, we always see it through a quarterback lens.
Right.
How's Ryan Tannehill going to play without Derrick Henry?
Right.
And he didn't have to do much because his defense was so good.
I think that's, to me, the biggest thing of the game, right? I mean, again, hey, a lot of credit to the Tennessee Titans. Mike Vrabel's one of those coaches where I just go, the way they play the game and approach the game on a weekly basis, whether they win or lose, I always go, that was the right approach for that game. Mm. Like, they were smart to play it that way. He's, you know, of course, Belichickian that way.
Yeah.
As far as managing the game and playing the proper style that's conducive to them getting the win that week. And it's not always about sex appeal and big plays and everything there. I think where I'm shocked is that the Rams kind of fell into the trap, in my opinion, a little bit like, hey, we're on fire and we're just going to go out and attack. And I'm a little surprised by that because McVay, I value him as a very good game manager himself. He usually sees the broad picture and is a little like, oh, there is no Derrick Henry. You know, maybe I'll be a little safe early on with my offense and not do too many crazy things and just see if they can kind of get their offense going. I'm not sure they can without Derrick Henry.
He didn't really get a chance to do that, though, because Stafford threw those two picks.
That to me, is that's why it's like great win. I don't know if we had anything answered about the Tennessee Titans offense last night, right? There was nothing answered. You're right. It was kind of served up a little bit on a silver platter by Stafford and some dumb mistakes, you know? And then because of that, you know, the Tennessee Titans got to play really conservative on offense, never really had to open it up. And the defense continued a theme that we talked about a little last week where, you know, they're a little bit bend, don't break, but they're great zone football team. And you saw that last night, you know, I guess in some replays, and of course even the Kevin Byard interception, they are great at passing people off within the zones.
Yeah,
and that was the one thing I think that jumped out to both of us last night. We saw Stafford, the Tennessee Titans D-line kick some butt on some plays, but I think on like half of those sacks, I went, He had plenty of time to throw.
He did, right?
He was patting the ball. He got to the top of his drop and took a hitch and took two hitches. But he was confused, like, whoa, people aren't open. They got people there. So I'll be interested to see that film. But that was something that jumped out to me for sure.
I almost think, as I watch more in this year, and it's really been a theme, and we've talked about it quite a bit. I've heard you talk about it a lot. A best friend or a best way to go up against a really good quarterback isn't so much a wonderful pass rusher. It's great if you can have one. It's great if you can have three.
Right.
But that confusion at the top of his drop is almost more valuable to a defense than someone who is just a phenomenal presence off the edge.
I think so. I think we're kind of getting there in the NFL because the quarterbacks are so talented, the offenses are so diverse that – you know, one great pass rusher off the edge can be nullified to a degree through game plan, through let's chip him with the back, let's put a tight end over there, let's slide the line that way more times than not, you know. So, but to your point, I think what we hit a lot on our Chris Sims What the Fuck Happened Wednesday podcast, where it always jumps out to us, is look, like, this team got pressure, and it wasn't like crazy blitzing or anything like that. It was through confusion of the pass schemes and then the quarterback going, wait, who came, who didn't come? Oh, wait, what the hell's the coverage? And I think that's what we saw last night. And Tennessee is one of those teams that, you know, I call it blitz change, right? Where it's, they brought two blitzers, but two guys dropped out, and it still was a four-man rush. They're great at all that stuff. They're really well-schooled on the back end as far as what to expect with route combinations and all of that. And, you know, they stymied that team a little bit, the Rams. And to your point, we never really got to see what the Titans' offense will be about going forward. That's still a question, I think.
Yeah, they only had 69 rushing yards, their fewest in a win since 2012. Some of that was predictable without Derrick Henry, but some of it was just the kind of the flow of the game and the way it went.
Right.
Maybe on Wednesday we can hit this a little more, but I want to touch a little bit on the Beyard pick six.
Sure.
Just because I saw it last night. I went right to you.
Yeah.
As much as I've watched football, it surprised me that, you know, a pick six to the sideline, it's usually either a corner that has squatted and jumped it.
Right.
Or it's a guy who lined up kind of close to the line of scrimmage and sprinted out to the flat and got it. Beyard was the safety and made it all the way over to that side
all
of the field.
All the way down, yeah.
And I said, hey, wait. What was that?
Right.
Why was he underneath that out route when he lined up at safety?
Right. It's like that's where, like, they're like what we talk about a lot with game plan specific. Like, to me, it was some form of a cover three zone, but he's looking for certain routes and things. Like,
he
they coached him
there.
Up. Right. Like, let's take away this single cut over here. They like to roll these single cuts. He might just run a 6-yard hitch or an out, get down in that area and just get in the way. And then, of course, he's got phenomenal instincts and feel for the game. That's why he gets so many interceptions and his hands on the ball.
You think he's allowed to just go where he wants?
I think in that general area, he was.
Okay.
I think he was in a, like, hey, get in this area. They like to do slants, little out routes, little quick things. If they get a one-on-one matchup, he's just going to take it and let his guy kind of work after the catch.
So even though he was lined up at safety, which would lead you to believe he's a deep half,
right,
you know, play in the middle, you know, maybe manned up on somebody, he just did what he wanted to.
He did, like, what they wanted to, but see, this is the other thing where they're really good. They don't give you the picture until after the ball snap.
Right.
They're very good and patient of going, it's this coverage, it's this coverage. Said Hut, oh, no, it's this coverage, you were wrong. And that's where they're good. And they try to make everything almost look like quarters. That's to me the thing they do.
And that's
it looks like
all four guys lined up kind of at the same
right,
depth.
Right, a picket fence in the back end. But right as you snap or motion, they start to, like, oh, you don't know what we're going to do. Oh,
right.
It's quarter half. Oh, it's cover two.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to roll to cover three. And that's kind of what it looked like to me, where he rolled down there real late to kind of be in that stop the one single cut guy. And made a great play.
Because even Stafford, over a decade in the league, that there's no way he lined up their pre-snap and said, I got to worry about that safety cutting off this out route.
Yeah.
Completely surprised him.
Yeah, completely surprised him. Then he had the dumbest one of the dumbest interceptions we saw all year, but the 360, you know, that, of course, hurt their football team incredibly there. Before the Rams really got going or in any rhythm of their offense, they were down 14-3. And, you know, then the pressure's on to, oh, no, we got to get it going. They don't make anything happen. And Tennessee kind of goes on a slow, ugly drive before halftime. And Vrabel has the guts to go for it on fourth and goal. And Tannehill keeps it on the little bootleg quarterback sneak. I think we were watching the game, and I said, he's going to keep it.
You did. That's
because
right.
I could see Vrabel pull the ball.
Yeah.
I saw Vrabel during the timeout say, hey, blah, 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 but just pull the ball. And when I said, oh, pull the ball, Tannehill's going to keep this watch. And then he kept it. But, I thought that was big. And then really, to me, the other aspect of the game that I thought was big was that first drive. I believe it was the first drive of the second half. Maybe it was the second drive. Tennessee, I think, got the ball. Rams got it, drove down. And the fact that they had to settle for a field goal close to make it, which, again, it was 21-3. I had no problem kicking the field and make it 21-6. Make it a two-score game.
Yeah.
You know, the Twitter mob, I was told, was going crazy because they didn't go for it. They weren't aggressive. No. You know, I think Sean McVay looked at it and goes, I think we're the better team here. Let's just keep this game going, keep a little pressure on them. Two scores with Matthew Stafford and my offense, we'll be fine. But I did think that was a big moment because, you know, hey, 21-6, you know, Van Jefferson was in the back of the end zone, I think, on first down, tried to catch the ball with one hand. I don't know why. He could have easily lifted two. You know, that game could have been 21-10 and a total different feel. And then we would have got a little bit more of the feel of what Tennessee's offense might look like with a little pressure, but that never really happened throughout the night, and it was a great win for the Tennessee Titans. Don't want to take that away from them.
I think that situation was fourth and goal from the four.
Right.
So
fourth and goal from the four.
With as much time as there was left, I mean, field goal makes sense.
It does.
To get it to
a
two-score game.
Yes, a lot of time left. A lot of time left. Let's not be crazy there.
One big picture thought with the Titans, and this might change next week, but right now in the AFC, that's the number one team at the halfway point. Is that misleading, or do you think it is the best team in the AFC?
No. You know, I think it is. I think they're the – to me –
look at the kind of wins they've had, like who they beat.
I just think the way they're coached – they can physically win battles up front on the offensive line. They can do the same thing on the defensive line.
Right.
We're seeing the pass defense really come together.
Big time.
Even though it's been a little banged up and whatever, it's still playing really well. You know, they take care of the ball. They very rarely beat themselves. Again, they're one of those teams right now. It's like, hey, we're going to make our play here and there, but we're betting you'll make a mistake at some point, Patrick Mahomes, Carson Wentz, Matthew Stafford. And then we'll get an advantage, and now we got you pinned to, oh, we're going to have to throw the ball a whole lot, and now I'm Mike Vrabel and Shane Bowen, and we're going to fuck you over with all our pass defenses and disguises and stuff, and you're going to be playing behind the eight ball here for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way they play. I respect it, you know, and you know, I think before we did our Peacock show last night, our producer Steve Greenberg kind of asked, he's like, who's the team you would take in the AFC? Or no, Tirico asked me.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think I'd still go with Tennessee. Mm-hmm. I got less questions about them as a football team.
2 weeks ago, would you have said Buffalo?
It would have been close, probably. It would have been close. It would have been. It would have been Buffalo. But I think after what I've seen for the last 2 weeks ago, I mean, 2 weeks as far as Miami and yesterday, that makes me back off of that a little bit. It does. I look at Tennessee right now as being that team. And the other team that I think just impressive to me that I think has great potential – but it's been a little disappointing we got on track yesterday. It was the Cleveland Browns. So I know we'll hit on all of that. Let's just keep pushing forward.
We'll get to the Browns eventually here. Next big game we want to hit. And I'm glad that we're including this or that we made it seconds in our lineup instead of third. Because
you're Colt McCoy, so we got to do that.
I forgot I was Colt McCoy today. Yeah, 22 out of 26. Almost as good as the old man going 22 out of 25 in the Super Bowl. Stakes weren't quite as high. But I thought what the Cardinals did on the road without Kyler Murray, against a team that had to win.
I mean, no doubt.
Niners
desperate.
Backs up against the wall, and they kicked that ass. It wasn't even close.
No, it was not.
With Colt McCoy, 31-17, so no Kyler, no DeAndre, no problem.
No problem. No A.J. Green. I mean, Chase Edmonds goes out early in the game with an ankle issue. It's just, I think it gets to something we've talked. There's a lot of talent on this team.
Yeah.
You know, Steve Keim has built a team that is very impressive. So, I mean, you want to talk about guys for GM of the Year candidates, Steve Keim should be in that.
Yeah.
There's depth. There's high-end talent everywhere on the football field. And I think what we kind of surprised us a lot about yesterday's game, right, was just the fact that, you know, yeah, Colt McCoy was efficient and played in the pocket, and we've seen that they're a more efficient team in the pocket this year, even with Kyler Murray. He's been better that way. But they can just beat you so many ways.
Yeah.
You know, oh, Cliff Kingsbury's got a trick play to help the offense jumpstart. Okay, great.
That was nice.
But, you know, they can do old school running, just smash mouth football. Great. You know, and of course they got some screens and just plays like that to always keep you off balance. And then let alone with their normal meat and potatoes of their offense, they have a little bit of everything to offer. So they're, unlike years past, not dependent necessarily on one guy or two guys to make things go.
Yeah.
And that to me is when you become a dangerous football team, when you start to go, wait, they're missing their two best players, and it doesn't really affect how good of a football team, that's when you know you have depth, talent, you're well coached, and you know Arizona, obviously, the best team in the NFC.
And their best player, Kyler Murray, is also the most elusive, and you're right there with Lamar Jackson, but the most effective runner as a quarterback in the NFL.
Yes.
And the fact that he has come so far in how he calls the game and what the offense is about, where Kyler Murray, with that skill set,
right,
can be out, and they can bring in an older veteran who moves okay, but not in a great way.
Right.
And call the same game.
Pretty much. Exactly right.
I sat here and listened to you kind of talk about rating Kyler Murray in your top 10, maybe even the top 5 for quarterbacks.
Yeah, he's right in that range. He's definitely top 5-ish. Yeah, yeah.
And your but was, you need Cliff Kingsbury to call a better game for
him. Yes, exactly right.
To help him more, give him more weapons, more schemes.
Right.
And the fact that Colt can step in and just run the same offense, to me, kind of brings it full circle with what we've talked about here, that he is helping that offense more.
Yes.
And that Colt can come in and do the same thing, run the same offense, even though he's a completely different kind of quarterback.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a team sport. You know, again, when you're just relying on one guy to make magic all the time, I don't care who you are, you're going to lose games you shouldn't lose. You're going to miss out in the playoffs after a hot start like they did last year.
Yeah.
You know? So that's now they got more versatility to play against different teams. Oh, they play this way. Okay, wait, we got pieces and schemes that can play that way too. That makes sense. Okay, great. So that's where they're just so much more dangerous. And, you know, of course, I think we talk about the defense being talented, the offensive balance, your point with Cliff Kingsbury giving more offense. It's a lot like, to me, like, you know, yeah, people on Kyler Murray before the year, exactly right. It's like, no, it's not about Kyler Murray. He's fine. He's superstar. They got to help him out a little bit. He's not going to carry them with three rockets up his ass and a rocket right arm and go 16-0. Like, that's just not going to happen. You got to do something there. Same thing with, like, Ryan Tannehill and the Tennessee Titans. I want to go, I'm not worried about Ryan Tannehill, like, one bit. Ryan Tannehill is going to be fine.
Right.
To me, it's a Todd Downing question. Is the offense going to be able to deliver enough for him? So that's what we want to see. But, you know, Cardinals, really good football team, like you're talking about. And I think the other thing, too, is the 49ers just have that bug this year of, like, biting themselves in the ass.
Before we get to the Niners, I just want to make sure we pay off James Conner. 26 touches, buck 73, three touchdowns.
What?
Talked about Steve Kime, the GM. I mean, none of us were that fired up, you know, nationally about the signing of James Conner. But here he is leading the NFL in touchdowns.
It's amazing. You know, he delivers a little bit of everything. You know, he's not, like, overly explosive, but explosive enough, like you saw, to take a screen 50 yards to the house.
Right.
You know, not like you don't look at him and go, oh, my gosh, he's Christian Okoye powerhouse, but he can run between the tackles and get a lot of tough yards. He really has no weakness to his game. He can do a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Pass protects well, runs routes out of the backfield well when he is asked to do that in the pass game. So he's been the perfect fit for their football team, along with Chase Edmonds. And I think that's, again, it's the attitude of the Cardinals, I think, that jumps out to me more than anything. You know, even the Eno Benjamin, right? The kid from Arizona State.
Yep.
I mean, even his run for the 21-yard touchdown just runs over Dre Kirkpatrick. That's where they're like high-flying, Golden State Warriors offense, but they got a blend of like old school New York Knicks basketball to them too, where they're like, "Yo, you want to play ugly and physical?
We could do that too.
We got Patrick Ewing and Charles Oakley in the post, no problem." So that's where the Cardinals, I think, are really impressive, and they're even more diverse on the defensive side with stuff they can do, which of course makes them tough too.
Turn the page to the 49ers now. 5 losses in the last 6 games.
Yikes.
They're 0-4 at home. I mean, nobody saw this coming. I want to bring in a social question here to kind of get it going.
Yeah.
At Lazy Brahman says, "I'm sorry, mate. I really like your analysis, but you're generally so high on the 49ers when they almost never produce on the field. You got to self-scout thyself." That's a little harsh from at Lazy Brahmin. But, I mean, the point is, to tee up the conversation, what is happening with this 49ers offense? It's not just one game. It's not just 2 games. This is a series of events, kind of like the Chiefs, that it kind of makes you believe, is this who they are this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think a little bit. We're getting to that point. You know, again, so, you know, where I get high on the 49ers to a degree is I watch the game and go, well, they're not, like, physically overmatched. They're not. I don't look at it and go, oh, my gosh, they're just getting dominated on both sides of the ball. I mean, again, you know, George Kittle fumbles early on, sets up a short field. I mean, he's wide open down the middle. I don't know what you want to say. I mean, he's wide open. Boom. okay, now they're driving a little later in the game. I think it might have been, what was it, maybe, was it 17-7 at this point? Might have been that. Maybe it was still, it might have been 17-0 still. They're driving. Jimmy Garoppolo throws a pass to a wide open Brandon Ayuk down the middle of the field. He's catching the ball. He falls on the ground. He gets up. He fumbles at the 5-yard line. You know, that's where, you know, and I think the game was 14-0 at that point, and that led to a long field goal drive by the Arizona Cardinals. But so that's to, you know, my mate there who's asking the question where I go, listen, there's like, I see a lot of good things they do to where I go, if they just limit mistakes, that game's going to be, you know, toe to toe in a battle there. But they seem to mess up situations like that, or it's a third and long, and they let Colt McCoy run around the pocket and find somebody for a big pass, you know, or it's third and 17, and you go, wow, they got everything locked up, and he throws a check down to the back, and the back goes and gets 20 yards. It's I guess, a little bit of that. Yeah, they're a little confusing that way. I see talent on their team, but I see a team that seems to, I guess to our questioner's point there, just, yeah, they're messing up some situations and some big moments almost every week right now.
I'm not looking at the standings right now, but I did this morning. I think they are tied with Seattle at the bottom of the NFC West. I think they're both 3-5. Pete, does that sound?
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, both 3-5.
Yeah.
Which one of those two teams, second half of the season, do you have more belief in right now that will come back and make a run at being significant mid to late December?
Neither one of them is going to give up. Like, that's the one thing. I know both of these teams are coached by psychos and have a bunch of psycho football players.
Yeah.
You know, Russell Wilson, of course, him coming back, which it sounds like he might be back
sounds
next
like
week against
close.
Green Bay, right? I mean, that changes things, definitely. I know that. I still look at the 49ers and think their team is better than Seattle.
Yeah.
I do.
What's the biggest thing you see in the Niners right now besides the potential and the flash is a good place?
Well, like,
reason you feel like that, like you would pick them over Seattle if you are going that way,
yeah,
to be the team that separates there and, you know, has a
I
chance.
I think with George Kittle back and, you know, them being a little healthier on the offensive side of the ball and Mitchell, I just look at the offense and I think it's more diverse. You know, I mean, you know, Seattle, again, we sit here a lot of weeks and go, I mean, I don't know what they were doing on offense.
Or, it's Russell Wilson.
It's Russell
the
making
world.
Magic. Yeah. It's boring. There's nothing what they do. They just ask him to make great plays. And then, of course, their defense at, you know, one point this year was on pace to be one of the worst defenses in football. So I know it's been better as of late.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I still favor the 49ers in that conversation was I'm talking about. And even here, like 3-5, I know. But, like, yeah, don't count out Seattle and San Francisco. I mean, I look at San Francisco and I go, I think they're better than Minnesota, Carolina, and Atlanta that are better than them. I do.
With seven teams making the playoffs, there is, I think, one team in the NFC with a losing record right now that will be playing in mid-January.
I think so. I would think
right?
so. I would think
it's
so.
It's going to be somebody.
One of those teams is going to get there. Now, yeah, they've got a losing record right now. Where they get to at the end of the year, can they get to 9-8 and be that kind of record? Yeah, but I think one of those teams is going to get there kind of like to what you're talking about. And if you made me bet, yeah, I'm not taking Carolina.
No.
I'm not taking Minnesota. I'm sorry, even though I know they've lost some tough ones. I just don't see the high-end talent of their team that way. To me, it would be Seattle or San Francisco to be that team.
Yeah.
I don't have quite the faith in Chicago yet to put them there. So, yeah, I look at them as being the team that, you know, can maybe steal that 7 spot from Atlanta when all said and done.
All right, let's move on to another game that created a lot of feeling, a lot of different headlines and attention. Broncos beating the Cowboys 30-16. And this is a classic. It was not nearly that close.
No.
Late in the fourth quarter, it was 30-0. Broncos over the Cowboys. And all the stats, all the ways that you would measure a game, that was complete domination. Let's take a look, Kristen. I think we have a number here. Cowboys offense first 7 games against what we saw yesterday. First 7 games, number 1 in the league in yards gained. And my goodness, they were horrible.
Horrible.
And I know the Denver defense is pretty darn good.
Yeah.
But, you know, a day later, how are you making sense of what you saw from the Cowboys yesterday?
Well, I mean, again, it's you don't capitalize early on in the football game for a few opportunities where they're kind of moving the ball. They could have gone up 6-0 if they decided to kick field goals. Well, I know one of them might have been like a 50-something yarder. The next one was a chip shot. Would have been like a 37-yarder. But, you know, you leave those two opportunities out on the field. And I've had these conversations. Again, I know aggressive, aggressive, aggressive. But there is something to say every now and then about, hey, we got 3 points on the board. We got a little momentum. We got something positive to build on. Now that other team has to go the whole field to get some points. You know, instead of, oh, wait, we just had two good drives and we come off the field dejected. And the defense wasn't ready to go on the field because they thought we were going to convert the fourth down. And now the other team's coming on the field with all this energy going, wait, we've been outplayed for two series and it's still 0-0. Like, so, and yeah, I've heard, you know, Pete's in my ear going right now, the Broncos felt disrespected by the two early fourth down, like, attempts by the Cowboys. I don't know why they should feel disrespected, but obviously it gave them energy. I know that. You know, Teddy Bridgewater and company kind of got in a rhythm there. You know, they go up 6-0, and I think the biggest thing I look at more than anything is just Dak Prescott and the offense were just off. He was off as I've seen him in a while.
He at one point was 6 out of 18. I mean,
that says it all.
He finished a little below 50%, which happens, but for an NFL quarterback of that caliber.
Right, and that kind of offense.
One out of three.
Yes.
I think they were like 1-for-11 at that time on third down.
Two fourth down conversions.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's almost 1-for-13 there when you really start to add that up. But I think that really boils the game to me was more and less than that right there. Dallas couldn't stay on the field after those first two drives. And then they could not get Denver off the field on the other side of the ball.
Right.
I mean, that's really what it was. And Dallas, again, is one of those teams that, hey, their team's built around their offense. You know, we've been sitting here trying to tell you the defense is good. Yeah, it's better. It's not. It's why I've had a little questions about them because I just go, I don't see dominant. I see they play hard and they cause some chaos and get a turnover or two every week. But I'm not sure how great that defense is. And you got a little taste of that yesterday when the offense doesn't put them in the position of power throughout the game. And they really struggled on that side of the ball, too.
A question from at Cody Hamilton 8 kind of fits right in there, Chris. How did the Cowboys get pushed around by a Denver offensive line that had to play seven different guys?
Yeah, I would like to go watch it myself. But, you know, there's not a lot of, like, overly big people on the Dallas defensive line. It's a little bit more what I would call they tend to lean towards let's go with the athlete over the size guy, right? So they got a lot of their biggest guy is, you know, I'm going to say probably 305, something like that. That's not big in the NFL anymore. A lot of the times they're playing Randy Gregory, who's 260.
Yeah.
You know, they got another defensive end who's around the same thing, and then they got a defensive tackle and like a you know, Odigizua, who's like 285 or 290, and another defensive tackle that's 305. That's just not that big. And obviously, it looked like they had some good schemed runs where they did some things, and it just seemed like Javonte Williams and Gordon just hopped through some holes with a full head of steam, and nobody touched them in the second level. So that's one thing I certainly would like to go back and watch and kind of dive in on the film to see what they did in the run game.
I give a lot of credit to Denver for you know, how that franchise felt during the week when they trade their most accomplished player, the one most associated with past success. They give him away for future draft picks for responding to that and coming out and playing with that kind of energy and that kind of production. You know, hats off, not just to one player, for that entire organization for how they came out and responded against Dallas. What do you do with Denver in the AFC West where every single team has five wins? I mean, for a while it looked like they were fourth, but after that performance and looking down like, okay, they're all pretty similar.
Yeah.
Where do you put the Broncos?
I think I probably still put them in fourth.
Yeah.
Like, respectful fourth, I want to say. I respect what they do. You know, the AFC West is interesting because I think all the teams have, like, some serious flaws about their team altogether. But, yeah, I got to see just a little bit more consistency. It's hard to make out what Denver really is quite yet. You know, again, I know we're 9 games into the year. But, no, I'm not ready to sit here and go, oh, they're going to go on a run here and dominate the AFC West. No, I'm not.
I have a hard time believing in the offense full-time.
That's exactly
Teddy Bridgewater was really good yesterday.
Right.
He was
we
fun to watch.
We haven't seen that consistently. We
Is
haven't
he
seen a run game like that consistent like that all year. I know that's what I mean. Is this an outlier performance, or is this something to say,
there you go,
watch out, this is what they're going to be going forward? I don't know that. I tend to think it's an outlier as of right now. You know, and, again, yeah, they played a motivated football game and caught – I don't care who you are. Dak Prescott, Mahomes, Peyton Manning, Bart fucking Starr, it doesn't matter. When you don't practice for 2 weeks, you're not going to go out in an NFL game and, you know, and you know, just set the world on fire that way. Dak Prescott missed some – they had a few drops, I know, but he missed some easy throws that you go, he usually makes that with his eyes closed. That would have changed the game or made the game different. And that was a big aspect, and like we talked about, I think, you know, missing that second fourth down, Denver goes down for a nice drive, scores a touchdown. Dallas, I believe, goes three and out or maybe gets one first down. Denver gets the ball back, and then he hits Tim Patrick for the long touchdown. Yeah. It's 14-0, and that's where it just became now Dallas couldn't stay on the field, and Denver just kept, like, bleeding them out on offense. Slow, long drives, field goal, field goal. And Dallas just never caught rhythm or got to impose their will in the physical aspect of the run game, and it just all compounded into a disaster.
Elsewhere in the AFC, disaster for Buffalo. Didn't score a touchdown. Number one scoring offense in the NFL. Not a single touchdown against Jacksonville. We will get to Buffalo and your thoughts on that, but let's start with a positive in that one. What leads the way for you with the Jaguars? It obviously can be Josh Allen, but you know they deserve some kudos for coming up with a way to not just beat Buffalo, but to keep them out of the end zone.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, there's talent on that Jacksonville defense. This is something I've tried to say to a few times during the year where I'm going to go, like, Jacksonville's got talent on their football team altogether. And to me, yesterday, you know, it just looked like they managed the game appropriately, had a really good feel for what Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills wanted to do on that side of the ball. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, podcast listeners, but I feel like I've been trying to tell people, top scoring offense, whatever you want to say, yippity-doo-dah, zippity-day, okay? They're not a top offense in football right now.
Buffalo's not.
They're not.
Because? They don't,
because it's all about Josh Allen just making magic happen.
Yeah.
That's not, doesn't, like, make you a top offense. You know, again, you know, had a few tricks and did some good things against the Kansas City Chiefs. I know that. But again, the Chiefs at that point, too, especially defensively, were in like a real funk, and we know they're not as good as we thought. You know, you look at like, we can go back to really early in the year, and I go, yeah, there's a lot of points on the board here. Miami week two, Washington week three. But I think if we went back and watched those games, you'd go, I'd go, well, look, the defense gave them the ball at the 18-yard line going in. I know we're going to go, whoa, they score a lot of points, but I want to go, that was an impressive drive, or the game itself was choppy on offense. Just because it led to a lot of points on the scoreboard didn't mean the offense came out as surgical or dominating the run game. I mean, they can't run the fucking football.
They don't try.
They can't even do it. They've given up lately.
Yeah.
Because their only way they run the ball is with Josh Allen designed quarterback runs or him scrambling.
He was a leading rusher.
The shocker.
Top two running backs, 9 attempts. 9.
They got nothing there.
They're not trying.
No, because I think they got to a point like during the year where they went, we're better off just keeping the pressure through our pass game.
But even if it's not great,
yeah,
I mean, I Josh Allen throwing it 47 times,
uh-huh,
and your top two backs carrying it 9 times. I mean, you can inside that building know, okay, we're not running the ball worth a shit.
Right.
But at least try 15 to 20 times. It's going to make Josh better.
It's going to make Josh better. It's going to open up some play action offense. That's where I would agree with you 100%. You know, attempts are an underrated stat in the game.
Completely.
Attempts are important.
Patriots weren't getting anything out of the running game, but those top two backs still carried it a combined more than 20 times.
They just keep it going.
For less than 100 yards.
Right. Because it helps out their whole football team.
Right.
You know, and again, we've seen the Tennessee Titans do the same thing. You know, just a few weeks ago against the Kansas City Chiefs, they ran it 29 times for 86 yards with Derrick Henry. It wasn't a special day, but they were going to keep Kansas City defending that because it helps their defense out, and it helps, most importantly, their play-action pass game, what they want to live off of. Yeah, Buffalo has nothing to offer there right now. They're in a funk on the offensive side of the ball. They're protecting just okay. It's not great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Brian Daboll, offensive coordinator, a little bit of a funk himself. They're not, you know, getting people open as much. I think the other thing I would add to that, and you've heard me say this before, you know, Buffalo's talent is not that great on the offensive side of the ball. It's not. There's no game changer other than Diggs on that side of the ball. And I don't think Diggs is as game changing as some of the other top receivers in football. Hmm. So I think with all that, and then you get Josh Allen in a game yesterday, like where he tried to do too much.
Yeah.
He reverted back to like old Josh Allen because he was getting frustrated and he was going, what? We should be beating this team and I got to make a play. And he cost them. He cost them the game. You know, there's a game yesterday, I think, if you really look at it, where you just go, they should have won that game like maybe 15-9. You know, maybe, you know, 15-6.
Yeah.
Whatever. It was that type of game. But because he kind of played a little loose and they have to ride him so hard, that's just some of the dangers you have when you play that way.
Riding him extremely hard. I went back and looked at what he's done all season.
Right.
His top three passing attempt games. So the three games where he has thrown the ball the most.
I'm interested to hear this, yeah.
Do you know what they all have in common?
Them losing?
Those are their three losses.
Yeah, there we go.
All 47 to 51 times. I mean, that's a shit ton of passing attempts, even for somebody that good. So I was listening to you last night on the show. You said that they're just expecting too much out of him. It's either Josh Allen magic or it's not. Was up last night, went back and looked at that. And I'm like,
it kind of goes
hand in hand with what you were saying last night.
Yeah.
If he throws it 37 times instead of 47, you're still getting a lot out of this guy who's a wonderful quarterback.
Right.
But you're not walking over to the line of, okay, that's too much.
Yeah, too much. It's too predictable. They're going to be in the shotgun. He's going to drop back and make it happen.
And it's not like these are games where they're down 17 points and you have to throw it. These are close games that they're losing.
Yes.
Where you can really choose, okay, are we going to lead on the run or are we just going to chuck it around?
I know. They got to find a little bit more balance that way. You know, and I think, you know, again, he can't be the leading rusher and being asked to throw the ball and do everything on offense week in, week out. You know, I mean, what is this? I mean, it's got to be about 4 or 5 weeks in a row where he's either the leading rusher or he was like a yard or two off from being the leading rusher in a game.
Yeah.
And, again, I know they're looking at it like, let's just keep pressure on people and Josh Allen and the shotgun and pressure, 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 and we'll play that way. And it's going to be effective a lot of ways. I get that. And, you know, again, they're like three-inch quarter cleats away from maybe beating Tennessee a few weeks ago in the quarterback sneak, and he doesn't slip and fall on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, there's still a lot of good to talk about with the football team, but what we're talking about right here is like, is this sustainable for them to go to the Super Bowl and play this way?
I don't know
about that. I'd say no right now. It's just, it's too much on him. And if it was like 47 times and we were going, and it was just surgical, and I'd be fine. That's great. They're using the short passing game as an extension of the run game. Fine. He's their best player. That's great. But it's not working like that right now.
Right.
And they got to find something else to, just like we've talked about with other teams, give the defense something else to think about a little bit.
On the positive side, the other teams, and you could pick out five teams that you'd say, okay, here's my top five teams in the AFC.
Right.
They all have major questions right now,
too. I know.
Really good potential, but some shit to figure out in these next couple months. So in that way, they're kind of right there with some of the other elite teams in that conference.
I think so, too. And I think when I look at them as compared to, like, we talked about the AFC, all those teams have, like, question marks somewhere on their roster.
Yeah.
With Buffalo, we don't question their defense, so that's a positive thing. We know the defense is top-notch, really. And, you know, I think of all the things I look at to go, ooh, I think it could be better or it can get better, I do think Daboll and Josh Allen and McDermott probably adding a few 2 cents on, like, hey, let's play this style just a little bit more, that they're a team I look at that might, I go, they can get this straight and get back into, they're a Super Bowl, legit Super Bowl contender in the AFC.
And a nice division to be doing that in.
No doubt.
As well.
I know, but they got somebody breathing down their necks.
Yeah, they do.
Yes,
that's
they
true.
Do.
I was thinking more about the bottom two than I was the Patriots.
Yep, they're back.
Let's take a skip over here to the individual side. Our friends from PointsBet will help us look at the front runners for the MVP. Tom Brady, he was off. He's the leader, the most likely, according to PointsBet. Josh Allen, the guy we were just discussing right behind him. Kyler Murray also sat out with an ankle injury. Stafford had a really off game. Dak Prescott had a worse game. Aaron Rodgers probably had a worse week than anybody. Yeah. Who do you like best here after a week where you can't really point at any of the top six candidates and say, he was awesome yesterday?
Well, I went into our show last night going, like, I would pick Matthew Stafford. Before the game happened, I had a pick it for our Peacock show, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, for me, to this point,
with him,
he's been the MVP. I'm not going to just let, like, one half of football change everything about what we've seen all year. You know, still, it's been high-level play, a lot of explosive plays. You know, he's changed the outlook of their football team, and it's happened quicker than I expected. I think the other two after that, I mean, listen, Brady and the stats, they're not going to stop.
Right.
I mean, Brady and them, they're too talented. They do have other elements of their offense.
Yes, they
make you defend.
Yeah.
So they never let you off the hook that way. So, you know, I look at, I think, more than anything on that list and go, Stafford, Brady, Kyler Murray are still the three I'd look at.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine. Their offenses have talent. They are talented. And, you know, even if they're off on a game or whatever, they got the type of team that can kind of keep them in it, you know, on the defense and with other elements of their team too. So I would guess those are the three. I'm still going to go with Stafford for right now.
Okay.
I am for now. But I think, you know, Brady and Kyler Murray are certainly right there.
All right. So from gambling into damn okay, I think we have a little sound that goes along with
this.
Oh,
yeah.
Damn. I'm okay.
There it is.
Damn. I'm okay. Yeah, no, I mean, yes. I'm okay. The legal gambolizing. Oh, baby. I am Chris Sims. I'm okay. Damn.
The gambolizing
okay.
is the
legal gambolizing.
Is your house sponsored by Under Armour? I mean, it's everywhere, right?
No,
here.
I know. It is everywhere. I appreciate that, Under Armour, but yeah. Nope. It's an awesome sponsorship. It really is. Very lucky to have them.
And the Cleveland Browns have so many examples of damn okay.
Yeah.
We have a number of ways we want to go here. Let's start with the so many big plays
right.
they had yesterday in that win over the Bengals, 41-16. The pick six that
yeah.
started the Bengals moving
right.
the ball early. All of a sudden, Denzel Ward, bam, 99
right.
yards.
99 yards. I mean, you know, game-changing moment. Great
yeah.
first drive by the Bengals. You're
nice.
Going, wow, look at this. This is great. You know, awesome. But, you know, hopefully this is what we'll see from the Browns more and more. As I've said, the Browns are disappointing because they're too talented on the defensive side of the ball to be doing some of the things they've done the last few weeks. Now maybe with them getting healthy, Denzel Ward being healthier at corner,
mm-hmm.
maybe that can add another element to their defense where they can do a few different things. But he's a special football player. I mean, again, he's got good size and length, and he runs 4.3, and he can change directions on a dime too. And Ja'Marr Chase on that play specifically tried to run a little like the slant, right, and then come back out. Denzel Ward did a great job of undercutting it and showed his great speed, you know, going in for a touchdown there, which was, yeah, a huge part of the game. I mean, really, I thought we were going to get a shootout at first in this football
yeah.
game. I kind of went, ooh, this is about to get fun. Because Cincinnati got the ball back and went right back down the
right.
field and scored again.
Yeah.
Then Cleveland got the ball and went down and scored. And you're going, ooh, this is going to be awesome. And then the Bengals got the ball back and started moving the ball. And I believe that was the Ja'Marr Chase fumble, I want to say, or it could have been, let me get this straight. It's going to drive me crazy because it was going like, ooh, this is going to be a shootout. And then, oh no, they went for it on fourth down. He threw it past Boyd. They don't get it. The next play ends up being the deep post to Donovan Peoples-Jones.
That's right.
And that makes it 21-7. And all of a sudden you went, uh-oh, now they're going to have to throw it a lot. And uh-oh, Clowney and Myles Garrett are playing in this game. So,
mm-hmm.
uh-oh. And then that led to, I think, the next series where Ja'Marr Chase fumbles. Cleveland gets the ball back, and it's 24-7. And you're going, well, hey, like, I love Joe Burrow in Cincinnati, but 24-7
right.
against this talented
yeah.
Cleveland defense, I don't know if you're going to overcome that.
Yeah, Joe Burrow, 28 out of 40, first career game with no touchdown passes and multiple interceptions. One more thought on their defense.
Yeah.
It comes from Nelly Mick, 2010. Hey, Chris, can we get a damn okay for Greg Newsome and the Browns secondary for
yeah.
pretty much shutting down Ja'Marr Chase without double-teaming him?
Yeah.
Five tackles, two passes defended for the Northwestern rookie. Per PFF, he allowed just four receptions, 46 yards on 9 targets.
He's been really good.
Yeah.
They don't play a ton of man-to-man, but they play some zone defenses where it ends up being very man-to-man-ish on the outside. And he's smart. He's got great body control. He's another guy that's got good length like Denzel Ward on the other side of the ball. He's not as explosive as Denzel Ward. But, hey, this is, to me, no doubt going to be one of the things. Like, if they can get Owusu Koramoah back.
Yeah.
And now you got, you know, both safeties, if not really, there's three of them when you add Delpit, John Johnson, and the kid from Alabama that I'm blanking on his name. You know, they got three good safeties, those corners, pretty good nickelback. You get Owusu Koramoah at the second level playing linebacker. And then, of course, that front four, I think, is very athletic. Rodney Harrison, thank you, Pete Demolitis. And, yeah, they caused some issues. I mean, Chase dropped a few footballs
they
yesterday.
Did.
I
yeah.
saw that, too.
Yeah.
You know, the Bengals are – I still think the Bengals have a lot to offer, and they're not out of this. They blew a game in New York, and then they've made mistakes again here in this one that really just – it became too much for them to overcome.
Big play Browns, first team
Big
since the
Browns.
2000 Eagles with a pass run and return touchdown of 60 yards or more in a game. And I've kind of buried the lead here a little bit on this game. Defense certainly deserved to be talked about here.
Yeah.
But Baker Mayfield and the offense playing this well without OBJ.
Yeah.
They were averaging a little over 13 points per game the
right.
last three games.
Right.
Now they came out it just set up so perfectly for them. They jumped out to that lead. They're running the ball well. Stefanski can get in those tight formations and run play action.
Yeah.
Why do you think Baker in this offense perform so much better without OBJ?
I really don't know. Listen, like, I mean, OBJ is not the reason they scored 17 against the Broncos or 10 against,
right.
Like, I mean, what did he do?
But you can't deny that.
No,
they were a lot
there's
better.
Some it, element
it's,
there.
It's so weird because he's so talented.
Defense has to worry about him. I'll say is Baker Mayfield does not play. He did not play the position true to form when Odell was in. We've shown plays. There's plays every week. I don't care. You go on any other.
You were showing them 2 months ago.
You can go on. It's caught on everywhere. So they can blame Odell all they want for all that stuff. That's wrong. That's not. That was them. He was open a lot. Yeah, did he make mistakes? Sure.
But the energy, something
different about it. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It obviously puts a little – I've been saying this for a year and a half. I really do think there was something mental there with Baker throwing to Odell.
Yeah.
Just couldn't quite get the rhythm or the timing of it down. And there was a little confidence lost in it. And then it became, an issue to where I guess you think about it too much. It's just funny where he got hurt in Cincinnati last year.
That's right.
And they kind of started to take off after that. And then it was this game this year where he's not there. But I think, this laid out the right way for them as well. It just laid out the right way. It just happened to be a team that, they matched up pretty well with. They made some mistakes. And we're seeing the Cincinnati Bengals defense. They got to change it up a little bit. Too much quarters coverage, a little too predictable, I think, on the defensive side of the ball right now.
Yeah.
To where you're seeing teams week after week kind of dial up plays on them like they know what they're going to get.
Can you think of a quarterback that needed a big performance yesterday more than Baker Mayfield did?
No, I think you're probably right. That was probably he probably had the flashlight on him more than any other quarterback in
Justin
the game.
Justin Herbert a little bit too.
Yeah, no doubt. That's another good one.
Kind of in the same. I'll bundle those two together.
Right, kind of went like a cold streak, both of them, and that was good. It was great to see Baker come out firing like that. And, of course, when they get that run game with Nick Chubb and company going, watch out. Like, damn, okay, Cleveland Browns. I'm not giving up on the Browns yet. There's too much talent on that football team. We'll see where they go from here.
Giants beat the Raiders 23-16. Xavier McKinney, 7 tackles, 2 picks, also a pick 6.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, McKinney's a baller. I mean, he's got a unique skill set coming out of Alabama. You know, he was hurt a little last year as a rookie, but like safety, nickel, can kind of do both of those jobs. You know, thinks he's 240 pounds and will hit you like that.
Yeah.
Like, and you're like, no, dude, you're 190. Like, relax, 195. But, he's got incredible speed. He's got instincts. He really knows how to play. He changes their team a little bit. He makes them a little more versatile, on the back end. And this is the reason, like, games like yesterday are why I defend Joe Judge. It's why I defend him. The Giants aren't better than the Raiders, but they manage and play the game exactly the right way, and they make you earn it, and that's what they did yesterday. Giants, it wasn't pretty. It wasn't. The offense just made a few plays when they had to. They got a little bit of a run game going, which, does scare me about the Raiders because they're another one of those teams where I go, not enough big people in the middle of their defense. Mm-hmm. I worry if they're going to be able to stop overpowering running teams as we go forward. But then, the Giants' defense making big plays was certainly the biggest thing going in this football game, whether it was his 2 interceptions or the strip sack fumble at the end. It led to a lot of empty yards from the Raiders. They moved the ball great, between the 20 to the other 40, but they couldn't quite capitalize throughout the day.
One of the best stats coming out of yesterday, they were 1-for-6 in the red zone scoring touchdown.
There you go.
6 times they got there.
That's unbelievable.
Isn't it?
It is.
That's hard to do.
It's hard to do, right. But the Giants made it a field goal game.
Yep.
Typical New England, Tennessee Titans type of thing. We'll bend. You'll kick a field goal. We hope we'll go score a touchdown.
Yep.
We'll bend. We hope you kick a field goal, and we might score another touchdown. And all of a sudden you go, it's been an even game, but we're scoring touchdowns,
and you're kicking
field goals, and look who's winning. And that's kind of the way the game felt yesterday. I mean, it wasn't pretty by any stretch of the imagination, but they played the game the right way and, of course, made a few plays on the defensive side of the ball that were crucial. The Giants aren't going to win pretty. They're not good enough up front. Jason Garrett has to manage the game every week. They have to manage. They have to run the ball probably a little more than they want to because they're trying to protect the O-line and Daniel Jones. They have to be careful about what kind of pass plays they picked because they got to protect the offensive line a little bit. But overall, I just thought, yeah, it was kind of just an old school Big Blue type of win. Big Blue.
You said that a bunch yesterday. Oh,
I
as
love
well.
It. I love, you know, I'm a Giants fan, hands down, no doubt about it. And I root for Joe Judge, yeah, because I know him.
Yeah.
But I do believe in him.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten sick of the haters on Daniel Jones to where it's made me be like one of his biggest fans. Because if they lose, everybody wants to get rid of him.
Of course.
And then when they win, hey, oh, he's not that bad. And I want to go, well, he's the best player in their offense, period. Like, get over it. So good win for them.
And one thought here on the Raiders, they have a big hole to fill. No Henry Ruggs, legal and tragic reasons that he's not there.
Yeah.
Tripod 2X asks, can DeSean Jackson, going from the Rams to the Raiders, help fill the void that Ruggs leaves?
Great question, and 100%. 100%. You know, first off, he can still go.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he's quite as fast as Henry Ruggs, but still can, you know, have that same element to the offense, and where it'll even be more seamless than anything. McVay, he's runs John Gruden's offense. Mm. Now, he's expanded it and had his own way of how he does it, but I would think the language is going to be very similar.
Yeah.
He's going to go in there and go, oh, I know this play. Oh, we called it the same thing. I just called this play the same thing with the Rams and McVay.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be very easy for him to jump in that way. You know, and the Raiders – you know, again, not giving up on them either. I think the one thing with the Raiders is, yeah, they need a DeSean Jackson. I know they can be surgical and boom, 8 yards, 7 yards, 8 yards, 12 yards, 8 yards. I know that. They need the big play element of their offense. That's where they're going to miss Henry Ruggs. That's why they need a guy like DeSean Jackson. And this is, let's be honest, one of the first games all year where we can go away and go, man, Derek Carr, you know, he was careless with the football twice, and it hurt their football team.
Right.
It's one of the first time all year we can kind of pin a loss maybe on him a little bit.
Yeah, two interceptions, first time this season with two or more interceptions.
Yeah.
So he's been doing a terrific job taking care of the ball, but not yesterday.
No, not yesterday. And, you know, again, they're up, you know, 13-10, right? It was 13-10, start the second half. He throws that out route, pick six. You know, then later on, I want to say it was 20-16, right? And he's got a little cover two hole shot down the right sideline, and he tries to rip it in there. Xavier McKinney got over there, intercepted it.
Yeah.
That led to the field goal. You know, so that really was big. And also another last thing, Paul, I know I'm talking a lot about this game, but I'm excited because it's the Giants. But it was 20-16 too. Raiders drove down the field, and a chip shot, 25-yard field goal, they missed to the left.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, Giants, some good breaks, definitely. But I think they made a lot of their own luck yesterday, and it was a big win for Big Blue.
And, hey, I don't want to let the damn OKs get away from us here before we talk about the Falcons a little bit. Going to New Orleans and winning. And Matt Ryan, 23 out of 30, 343, two touchdowns, no picks. I mean, he looked like, and he can still do this.
Oh, he can.
He looked like the Matt Ryan of a few years ago where he was in command, making good decisions and putting the ball where it had to be.
Yeah, and like no threat of the run game, really. They put it in his hands and said, go, big guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing that I think that jumped out to me was a lot of get the ball out of your hands quick early on in the game. We know the Saints. They can get after you. They're confusing. And I think the other element that Drew Brees kind of threw me on a little bit yesterday, he goes, when they're getting in third downs, he goes, look, they're going hurry up. They're going tempo.
Yeah.
So they were and what that does for people out there, it simplifies the defense because now it's hurry up. They might try to run out their personnel real quick. Wait, it's third down. I'd like one extra DB out there, blah, blah, blah. But you're not going to get crazy with some defensive call now and go like, hey, I want, you know, under two, spy, flash, cover four, weak, where it's like, hey, we're showing this defense. We're going to buzz out, and then we're going to play that defense. Like, that stuff goes out the window in those situations.
Right.
They just start going, oh, you know, cover two, cover four, hurry up. They're about to snap the ball.
Right.
And that was one of the elements of the game that I thought was very interesting and really got them off the schneid early and got them kicking butt and really, you know, playing at a high level.
I love that big play he had on that last drive where he hit Cordarrelle Patterson down the right side. Mike Florio talked to him after the game and kind of explained he saw the safety come down. He knew he had one-on-one.
Right.
We hear this term arm talent all the time thrown around out there, but nobody really defines it that much.
Yeah.
I thought that was a wonderful display of arm talent because of the way he threw that ball. Like, on a deep ball, if you're pushing it down the sideline, you usually throw it 45 or 50 yards.
Right.
If you're driving it, you usually drive it to 18 or 20.
Right.
It was only about 30 yards downfield. Yeah. He threw it really high.
Like soft.
A kind of a pass. Like you don't see that kind of arc on a pass that short very often. And the fact that he had that shot in his bag, I thought that was really cool.
Beautiful. I mean, he's got all the clubs in the bag. He's got all the clubs. I mean, the only club he probably doesn't really have is he can't rip the 350-yard drive down the middle, right?
Which you don't need to that often.
You don't need to that often, right. You don't. You certainly be a Super Bowl-winning quarterback and kick ass and be an MVP without having that aspect.
Right.
He does everything else the right way. You know, and I think, you know, that's that point, I'm glad you brought that up because that to me is, you know, again, they're so Pitts and Cordarrelle Patterson heavy.
Yeah.
And what they do, and they make what I like about them is they make you, like, you know, force the issue a little bit. Like, we're going to use them. What are you going to do to stop
them? What are you going to do about it?
And that helps out other angles. And to your point, that one early on in the football game, you know, they put a lot. He's the tailback, Cordarrelle Patterson.
He had 9 carries and also 6 catches for $1.26.
This is what he does every week.
So cool.
So now he's the tailback.
Yeah.
He goes out and they go, well, wait, he's the tailback. We wanted to play man to man. We're going to put our linebacker on there. Well, you got to stop doing that shit.
Yeah.
He's not a tailback. He was drafted as a first round receiver, kick returner. He's just a freak show and can do anything. I mean, if you saw Cordarrelle Patterson in person, you'd go, holy shit.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Right.
Like, he played with my brother at University of Tennessee in college. He is a freak show. He's one of those guys where he just walks in the room and you go, now I know why he just keeps hanging around the league.
Right.
He's got 3 rockets up his ass and he's that big.
Yeah.
But yeah, that, and then it was him at the end of the game too, right? With the long throw down the right sideline.
That's what I was talking about.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the earlier one.
No.
Because there was one on the first drive or the second drive of the game where they got a long one, too.
I was talking about the one that set up the field goal.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. They were both a very similar throw.
Threw it straight up in the air.
And just dropped,
right
let
down.
It drop down.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. It was really – he threw a similar throw early in the game.
Okay.
But that was a huge moment in the game because what we saw really Falcons kind of got into – we're up 24-6. They started playing a little more conservative on defense. Simeon and company, it just seemed like it was a lot of 5, 6, 8 yard passes. They kind of got in a rhythm and they scored 3 straight times. And you're going, man, the Falcons can't do jack diddly squat here.
Right.
What's going to happen? And he makes that big throw to ice the cake. So damn okay, Matt Ryan.
Big time.
Way to go. Damn okay, Matt Ryan. Damn okay, Xavier McKinney. Damn okay, Denzel Ward. Damn okay, Under Armour.
Man, that was well done.
Thank you.
And by the way, the Falcons are 5-5. I mean, I'm sorry, at 500 now.
They're fighting. They're there.
At
4-4.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're doing it, but they're doing it.
But they are right there.
They are.
Under Armour, there's a little read here.
Yeah, I got it.
It's kind of become a sneaky favorite part of the show.
Yeah, it's for you. You like it.
I'm just going to sit back.
Okay, just sit back and enjoy the ride, big guy. Don't you worry.
Take notes.
Hey, we are supported by Under Armour, and just like us, Under Armour wants to give you an edge. Yeah, Paulie and me are trying to make you sound good with your friends right now, tell you what happened in the games, all right? They are focused on performing better and taking their game to the next level. Everything from running shoes that propel you forward to hoop shoes that give you insane grip. They even make hoodies that reflect energy. We're not just about the end result, winning, or glory. Under Armour is about that hard work. Yeah, hard work. The dedication, the cycle of training, competing, and recovering. We give you advantages, but not shortcuts. Pauly B, the only way is through.
I remember back in, and well done, by the way.
Thank you.
Back in like 08 or 09 when they first got into the apparel game, they started making shoes.
Oh.
And they'd come down to the Senior Bowl and give all of us, like they sponsored the event.
What?
And like I was the only one in my neighborhood, in my town, with Under Armour shoes.
Same time frame was like, you know, I felt like they were the first with the tight, dry fit shirts and all
there
that too.
Yeah.
To where I'd have those and people like, man, where'd you get that shirt you're working out? And I'm like, Under Armour.
Yeah.
And they're awesome. And it became a thing. I mean, of course, other companies tried to steal the idea, but Under Armour started that shit first.
A hoodie that reflects energy? What's
I
up
know.
With that?
I don't.
Do you have
I'd
one?
Not to see that.
Do you have one yet?
I need to get one just to reflect Florio's energy. I'm trying to get it just to reflect from him. I just want to be like, don't make us too similar. Reflect him away from me.
He scared me yesterday in that viewing room because I didn't know that his presence was there on that large monitor. Like, you can see him, and then all of a sudden you started talking.
He
I'm
just
like,
talked
that's
out
Mike's
of nowhere.
Voice. Where is
I know.
Mike?
Usually I mess with him a little bit more on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Especially when Minnesota starts to lose games.
Yeah.
I love that. So I start like making fun of Kirk Cousins and the Vikings because he takes it so personal. But
yeah,
Florio, he's there typing away, copy paste, snarky comment.
Okay, we've made it this far, and we've not hit the Chiefs in that offense, Sterling.
So I think
we
need to do
that now. Chiefs, that was loud. That was the loud noises coming from that
throwing up. I'm going, this table. Offense, Chiefs.
Chiefs, even though it felt like a loss for Kansas City, to be honest, they beat Green Bay 13-7. Let's take a look at this Mahomes graphic. There are a lot of ways to show that they're struggling. Yards per attempt yesterday, 4.5 yards per attempt. That's awful for any quarterback. Lowest of his career. His yards per attempt and yards per completion the last 4 years have been going down a little bit each year.
Yeah.
And this year it's just been going down drastically. So
one thing I look at right there on that graphic, right, is I just go, other than New Orleans – last year, where New Orleans last year in that Week 15 game, he was under assault by the pass rush of the Saints and stuff. So I understand that. But all those other teams there, you know, Green Bay, 4.5 yards per attempt, Buffalo, 5.5 yards per attempt, even Chargers 2019, 5.7, Giants 2 weeks ago, 5.7, you know, earlier this year, Tennessee. You know what they all have in common?
What do you got?
They're really good zone defenses. Mm-hmm. They understand how to pass people off. So you never get Tyreek Hill or Kelce on the island. You never. It's about offense, execution, you know, what schemes you got to take advantage of that, and can your quarterback pick it apart? And right now, that's a negative Ghost Rider.
Big time. And that's, I mean, we're focusing so much on Mahomes, and his game does look totally different. It's by a couple standard deviations, not what it used to be.
Not even close.
But this whole Hill and Kelce thing, where how many times in the last 2 years have we sat here and like looked at their numbers combined and been like, oh, my God.
Right.
How did the defense let them go for 17 combined catches for 250, which they did something like that all the time?
Yeah.
You can't find that this year. And, you know, maybe it's Mahomes not seeing it, throwing it well. But defenses aren't just playing Patrick differently. Those two pass catchers are not producing at all the same way they used to.
Well, it's a little bit like the same thing we talk about with a lot of offenses. There's struggle. There's not enough off to offer right now. It's just like, oh, it's Mahomes and Hill or Mahomes and Kelce. And if they can't do that, what else do they do? Because there's nobody else to depend on. And I just want to go, if you look at other top offenses in football, they give you a little bit more to think about than two guys and a quarterback trying to throw it to them all the time.
Yeah.
You know, so that would be one thing that jumps out to me. They tried to get in the run game going a little bit yesterday. You know, Green Bay is one of those teams, though, just like we saw on that graphic there, where, you know, they're just going to sit back and go, we think you'll mess up, and we're not going to give the big play. We're going to let you execute, see if you can do it the whole way down the field. Now, the one good thing for, like, Kansas City yesterday is they didn't mess up. You know, so that still allowed them to win the game. They didn't turn the ball over. Mm-hmm. But, man, was it ugly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ugly. I don't know what else to say. He's not seeing it. You know, again, I know there was a few replays I saw during the game where I went, he threw the ball down the field. I don't know why. There's a guy wide open 7 yards in front of him. What's he doing? I don't understand it. You know, so I'm expecting to see some of that on the film once again.
Yeah.
But, yes, you know, they've lost their mojo completely. He's lost his mojo. It's in his head right now to a degree, and I think it's in their whole team's head. Their team has lost their swagger.
Right.
You know, there's like, I think the first time in the Mahomes era, they're going, wait, are we going to win this?
Clearly.
Today?
He's in like, I mean, he's in a slump. He's in a slump. And like the best baseball players, like Mike Trout can go 1-for-26, and you know at some point he's going to come out and, you know, and be terrific again. Is he just in a slump? Like, is he 1-for-26 right now, and for the next couple of months he's going to be okay and snap out of it?
I don't know if it's going to happen this year. I don't know. I mean, it might happen to where it gets a little bit better, but do I think it's, like, going to take off and just go on fire again here? Like, I would have a hard time believing that.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see maybe some moments of going, oh, that looks like the old Kansas City team. You know, might get, you know, good matchups against certain defenses here in the future. But all in all, for me to sit here right now as it's looked and go, well – you know, hey, 4 or 5 weeks ago, there were some signs where I went, there's some stuff to build on. I think they can go in the right direction. After the last 3 weeks, I just go, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any – this might be who they are this year.
How much of this falls on Andy Reid? Because, I mean, it's easy to focus on Mahomes because it looks so much different. Like, he's just not reacting at the top of his drop the way he used to, not throwing it the way he used to. But we've always given credit with Mahomes to Reid for being a wonderful play caller and schemer.
Right. How much of this falls on him? A little bit.
Yeah.
They do. Yesterday was the first time I ever felt like they actually were managing Patrick Mahomes. I think I said that to you last night.
Yeah.
I said the way they played the game a few times, it was like they were like, let's not let him – it's third and three. Let's just run it. Let's not let him drop back and throw some stupid pass.
Isn't
like he's
that
been
crazy
doing.
That here first crazy. Week in November we're saying
it's
that?
It's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, that's really kind of the feel I got yesterday. It was yeah. kind of looked like – they kind of went like, wait, they got Jordan Love. Let's just win 13-7.
Let's just not lose this
Let's
game.
Just not lose it.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, that's where, hey, it stinks for Aaron Rodgers and his situation because I just think if he plays, there's no doubt they win that football game yesterday. Just ugly, ugly performance by the Chiefs offense.
I want to use this question from Twitter to kind of set up hopefully what we can do Wednesday when we're looking at exactly what happened.
They got to do more. They got to give something else. There's got to be a new angle they approach offense with. I know they tried to run the ball yesterday a little bit, but even that within the run game, I want to go, there's got to be more to the run game. You know, I look at their run schemes and just go, it's the same run every – it's always inside zone or outside zone. That's all they got. There's got to be more there. And I think that's what disappoints me too. And like we've talked about, they were the kings of offense for so long.
Yep.
Teams have kind of figured out how they want to attack, the routes they like to run, and – there's just not a lot to think about, I think, for defenses when they play Kansas City right now.
And I think, Chris, that this can be just something to think about for Wednesdays from Orion Chuzzlewit, friend of the program. I think he sent in some before. Chiefs and Bills were held to a combined 19 points this week. Has the league figured out high-flying, pass-heavy teams who are reluctant to lean on the run? If you want to give a quick preview to that, feel free, but I think that'd be fun to focus on that on Wednesday a little bit.
Yeah, 100%. And I think to that point, I mean, I think there's like – definitely realness to that.
Yeah.
The coaches, the defensive players are too good. I don't care who you are right now to just think like, we're going to do this all game and you're not going to stop it. All right. You know, maybe if it's something new and it's a new talent and a new offense and a scheme that like people aren't used to, like Mahomes in Kansas City when he first jumped on the scene. Okay, fine. Throw it 48 times a game. Who the hell cares about a run game?
Yeah.
But no, what you're seeing now is like, hey, people have caught up to what they want to do. They're not playing as well. And they got no other answers on the board to kind of go like, oh, you moved here?
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to move here now. We got this element. And I think what like I just pull up the top offenses in football. All right. Chiefs are at 7. Bills are at 8.
You going yards or points?
I'm going yards right now. You know, and again, they're misleading with their yards. You know, and again, they feasted on the week a little bit earlier in the year, both of those teams.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at the other teams, the Cowboys, the Ravens, the Bucks, the Rams, the Cardinals, the Raiders, they all have like they have a lot to offer on their offense.
Yeah.
You know, again, we saw like the Rams last night, oh, the shotgun's not working early with McVay and Stafford. Let's get underneath the center. We're going to run the ball. We're going to play actions. We're going to boots. We're going to bring that back. Okay, we're driving down the field, field goal. Hey, we're driving again down the field. They have other avenues to go, wait, we're not working in this area today. Now we can do that. And I think to our question there with Orion is that, it's just too hard to play that way week in and week out and expect magic. Orion, expect magic out of your quarterback.
It's spelled Orion, O-R-I-O-N.
Orion's belt. Yes.
It could go either way.
Yeah.
It's a judgment call.
Matt, the W.
This isn't as bad. I realize I have that on my resume.
Yes, you do.
So it's easier to throw that out there.
Yes, right. What did you say the name was, though? What was your original? Orion?
Orion.
Yeah,
Orion. Orion. O-R-I-O-N.
Yeah.
Yeah. It could be.
Yeah,
it may
could be. You're right. Let's have Orion, okay? Please let us know how you would like your name pronounced, and let's see who's closer, me or Paul.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
There should be an apostrophe in there if that's what he's going with.
You're funny.
Okay. I know I have this one correct.
Jordan Johnny Love. English class over here.
Jordan Love.
Yeah.
That's it. That,
you got that
I
one.
Said that name
you're good.
Properly.
You're good.
First thought after watching him yesterday.
I mean, tough situation. Honestly, it's kind of what I expected. It's what's a little scary about Jordan Love.
Yeah,
you know, it's a little bit what I saw in college. Like, there's a few throws where I went, "Oh, look at that! That looked good."
Yeah.
But then there was a whole bunch of throws where I went to go, "Well, what the hell? How do you miss that? How do you miss that throw by that amount?"
Part of it you expect from a rookie making his
first
start.
It's not easy going into Arrowhead. That's exactly right. I'm not trying to be overly critical, but I think there was more than a handful of throws where I went, "Listen, I know this isn't an easy environment, but like." The fullback in the flat's wide open. It's a four-yard throw. You can't throw it 4 yards over his head.
Right.
Right? You're moving in the pocket, and there's really not pressure in you, and you're going to throw the check down. and Aaron Jones is wide open, and he can't even get a hand on the ball.
Yeah.
Like that to me goes beyond like, okay, it's just a tough situation. And yeah, that to me is, yes, there's a little bit of flaws in his mechanics. And what I really want to say is I want to say, stop watching fucking Aaron Rodgers and trying to do what he does,
like
throwing the football.
Jumping when he throws.
Right. It's the Zach Wilson disease with the Jets, too. Because I'm sure he's watching Matt LaFleur's offense, and when his brother's implementing, he's going, this is what Rodgers does.
Yeah.
Don't be like Rodgers. You can't do it.
You can't. Right.
You can't. You can't throw a fade route to Devontae Adams with both feet off the ground and think you're just going to turn your body and make it happen. Rodgers is a different animal. And, of course, he's played a ton, so he's comfortable like that. He can do whatever now. You know, he's like the golfer who's played 90,000 rounds. He's like, oh, you want me to hit the chip like this? No problem.
Right.
Oh, I'm gonna drive it. I'm going to hit a fade. I'm going to hook, whatever. They can do everything. Like, don't do that. So that was just some of the things that jumped out to me, too, where I just want to go, like, you got to play your mechanics a little bit more close to the vest and traditional right now.
Right.
Get in a rhythm and a flow, and then maybe down the road we can start being Aaron Rodgers.
Anytime you're watching a rookie who's playing for the first time at that position, especially a first rounder, because expectations are so high, I always tell myself, okay, don't make any conclusions. Watch him play 6 or 8 times before you say anything
about what this guy is. Right.
But you always want to look for, like, some not wow, but
some silver
how
lining.
The ball comes out, some moments where consistently good placement where you're like, okay, I can't wait to watch this guy play again. And, you know, comparing it to a Burrow or a Herbert, or even like Russell Wilson 10 years ago,
there weren't that many moments.
No. There were more moments where you're like, oh,
yeah,
that's not supposed to be that way.
Right.
There were more of those.
Yeah, I agreed. You know, and I think even the good throws, they weren't like we were like, oh, wow, whoa.
There's a lot of inaccuracy.
You know, even I think on the completions that I look at that were kind of significant during the game, it was like, okay, guy was pretty open. He just threw it. You know, nice rhythm and got it out there, right?
Yeah.
But I'm with you there. I didn't see, like, I've said against, like, with Zach Wilson or Trevor Lawrence, like, ooh, I like the look. I know they threw 2 interceptions or whatever, but some of the throws they made,
right.
I go, wow.
Right.
Like, that's another level. I did not say that with Jordan Love, and, hey, that was big yesterday. But having said all that, there they were. They had the ball, and they had a chance to win the game against the Chiefs, 13-7. It's insane. And yeah, he made mistakes, certainly. They missed Rodgers, and like I said, I don't think there's any doubt they win that game if Rodgers is playing.
You mentioned this game on the other side, the Vikings a little bit, but the Ravens finding a way again to win 34-31 in overtime. Lamar Jackson throws for 266, and he runs 21 times for 120.
I mean, baller.
Gosh.
You know, again, maybe this is another guy that needs to be put in the MVP conversation a little bit more seriously.
I mean, especially with the way they're winning.
That's what I mean. You know,
there with Tennessee for the top team in the AFC.
Comeback wins, for some reason, with Lamar Jackson don't get the same publicity as other quarterbacks.
Because it happened all the time.
I mean, it's a little annoying,
how they
though.
Win.
I know. But, like, I feel like we're like, oh, if that was Mahomes or Josh Allen or Rodgers or Brady, here they come again, leading their team from behind. But with, like, Lamar and the Ravens, for some reason, nobody really wants to give him the credit like they would other people. That annoys me. You know, that makes me root for them a little harder because I just go, well, why?
Right.
Why? I mean, they were down big in that game. I
know
it wasn't all him, but it was still a lot him. It's a lot him. It's a lot him making great throws. It's a lot him making unbelievable runs. I mean, he's the best player on their team. They're 6-2 for one reason, because Lamar Jackson's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
There's a reason John Harbaugh comes up to him after the game and, like, wants to French kiss him and, like, hug him every time, because he's like, we wouldn't have won that game without you. You're amazing. Way to keep us in it. Way to be tough.
Thank you.
He's got some things about him that I really, really respect. And, that was a big one. That was a crazy game.
It was like the first half was kind of slow. The Vikings offense was
dominating, right?
Then they ran the kickback.
Right. They run the kickback.
And Baltimore seemed like they just weren't going to show up.
Exactly right.
And
I kind of expected to see the Ravens of what we saw in the second half. I thought the Ravens would win this game by 17 points because I thought we would see what we saw in the second half, that they won't be able to get the run game going. The Ravens' D-line's pretty big, and the pass game's so simple that they'll be all over some of the concepts. It looked like the Vikings had a few tendency breakers or some tricks early on. They let up a huge run to Dalvin Cook when they had him pinned back at one point. So it was a lot of big plays early on from the Vikings. Lamar threw the pick in the first half.
Yeah.
That led to a short field goal.
Two overall.
Right? So that was that they were down 17-3. you know, pretty quickly. Drive down, get the touchdown before the half, but then you go, okay, this is going to be a game. It's 17-10, and then, like you said, the first play of the second half ends up being kick return, and you're going, oh no, like this, I don't know if the Ravens are going to be able to do it today. It just doesn't look right. But they hang in there, and a lot of great drives in the second. They dominated the second half of play. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. All right, time for Give Me the Headlines, presented by Hyundai. There we go. They were ready to press that button. Panthers lose to the Patriots 24-6. You got a headline for me?
Oh, I got to have some fun here. This is too easy. I said this on Sunday Night Football last night. You know, it plays into, you know, Sam Darnold a little bit. Uh-oh. I see dead people.
M. Night Shyamalan.
Yes.
In the
I see ghosts.
What was that?
It's
The Sixth Sense.
The Sixth Sense, right. Yeah. Exactly, with Bruce Willis.
It was hard to watch.
Yeah.
Not the movie. Movie was good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, watching
Sam Darnold
play.
Yeah.
Wasn't, like, hard to.
Yeah. I mean.
It just kept getting worse. The interceptions kept getting worse.
Yeah, they're horrible. They have officially reached horrible on offense. I don't know what else to say.
2 months ago, he was playing really well.
Playing really good. Again, it wasn't as good as everybody tried to make it out to be, but it was good. He's playing horrible. People have caught on to Joe Brady's offense 100%, and they can't do shit, really.
Yeah.
I mean, again, they got 6 points early on because of Patriots' mistakes. I mean, strip sack fumble on Mac Jones. Mac Jones had the interception to Stephon Gilmore. That led up to two short fields. You know, other than that, there was nothing to talk about until the third quarter, where now the Panthers were down 14-6, and Sam Darnold threw a horrible interception that got returned, what was it, for 88 yards and a touchdown by J.C. Jackson.
Right.
And that was night-night.
You know what was surprising to me?
Yeah.
Matt Rhule came out, and he didn't say anything incorrectly,
right.
The head coach of the Panthers afterwards.
Yeah.
But they usually say, we just got to get better. I got to call a better game.
Right.
He was like, we can't have a quarterback just, you know, throwing the ball in the air like that. He kept coming back to that. I'm like, wow.
Right.
That's where he is with this whole thing, that he is just airing that out in the post-game press conference.
I don't think he can avoid it anymore. He'll look like he's playing favorites. He's got to send a message to his team that's like, it's not acceptable.
Yeah.
It's not. And I mean, again, there's a bootleg. It's 14-6. He's running to his left. He looks like he's trying to throw to the back in the flat, or maybe Ian Thomas behind him. The throw was so bad, I'm not exactly sure who he was trying to throw to.
Mm.
And I know he's going against the, you know, he's running to his left as a righty, but I mean, we're in 2021. That's not a thing anymore.
Yeah.
Right. And J.C. Jackson, again, I mean, J.C. Jackson's phenomenal.
Yeah, right?
I mean, two picks. The one at the end of the game was very easy. Darnold had to kind of force the issue. I get that. But J.C. Jackson was looking the whole time. I don't know what the hell he was thinking. J.C. Jackson's one of the best corners in football. The Patriots are going to have to pay him $20 million a year next year. And then there was the Jamie Collins interception, which, so he throws three interceptions yesterday. Two of them are on him. The Jamie Collins one, I'll say it was just a great play.
Right.
I mean, he threw the ball over the middle. Jamie Collins was kind of in the line of scrimmage and in the fray and just jumped up and snagged the ball as it was going by his head at like 100 miles per hour.
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, again, that's a little unlucky, but overall, their offense is shitty. And Sam Darnold is playing shitty on top of that, and that leads to getting your shitty ass kicked 24-6 to the Patriots, who are dangerous, and
right?
I'd say watch out, because they're starting to look like a Patriots football
four
team.
Four out of five.
Uh-huh.
Top two running backs, 25 carries. Mac Jones only had to throw it, I mean, it was less than 20.
Ooh.
That game played out perfectly for the way they need to win right now.
They manage games. It's Bill Belichick. You know, it's again, it's why, you know, Joe Judge we've talked about, Mike Vrabel we've talked about. Like, they don't care about sex appeal. They're just going to do, what do we got to do to win this game? Nobody's going to remember 4 months from now, go, well, they played a boring style to win 24-6.
They won.
They're just going to go, well, they won 24-6.
Yeah.
Played a good game. You know, Mac is efficient, and they're starting to run the ball on everybody. Ramondre Stevens is a little, like, budding superstar.
Pretty good,
for them.
Right?
Yeah. And their defense is one of the best in football. So from that aspect, I just go, watch out. Think about, they lose a heartbreaker to the Cowboys. They lose a heartbreaker to the Bucks.
Yeah.
And they outplayed the Miami Dolphins in week one and messed that game up to where you go, there's three games right there where, I mean, the whole year's different. And that's why I say watch out for them, because they kind of got, like, they got their mojo. Like, this is how we play.
Mm-hmm.
We don't care. We're going to own it. And you're going to see, I think, a lot of victories like this for New England.
Chargers got their mojo back as well in Philadelphia. Chargers beat the Eagles 27-24. Your headline is...
Bzz, 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 jumper cables. Booyah. Got it? Chargers charged up. Justin Herbert back on the ship. That Philadelphia pass defense reared its ugly head, what we saw a few weeks ago against the Raiders.
32 out of 38.
Right. That's the kind of numbers Derek Carr had a few weeks ago.
Right. Yeah.
You know? And to me, it's the same offensive system. It's very West Coast-centric. A million ways to throw for 7 and 8 yard completions.
Mm-hmm.
Really at no point yesterday during that game where they slowed down. You know, I don't know. Pete, maybe you can look it up. Maybe they punted the ball once or twice, but it wasn't much.
No.
I mean, they went down the field, got stopped on 4th and 1 on the goal line. You know, they really never got stopped throughout the day. Zero punts.
Wow.
So that just tells you.
Is that good?
That is good. You know, they had a few mistakes here and there, and I think, you know, where they just had to turn the ball over on downs. But good win for the Chargers. Of course, what I'm a little worried about, I'm not worried about their offense. You know, I know it's the NFL. They might have some weeks where it doesn't look as good. But what I worry about is what we saw from their defense again, too, and that's what's weird about the AFC West. Because there's just every team you look at, you go, not just a flaw, like there's like a significant flaw that I worry about.
Yeah, some pretty major concerns. Yeah. I think we have a number here on Justin Herbert, what he did yesterday compared to the previous two games. He started throwing interceptions, 3 interceptions in those two losses, 3 touchdowns yesterday, no picks, 84%. I'm glad you brought up what Derek Carr did. I think he was around 90%.
Right.
So, doing against that defense, there has to be maybe a little bit of an asterisk next to it.
Yeah, definitely.
But still.
Too many soft zone coverages out of Philadelphia.
Yeah, right. But still very well done.
Very well
by
done.
By Herbert and the Chargers.
That's right. Got them back on, you know, on the right track there, you know, and they're spreading the ball around. And you know, they're going to have to win through it, through their offense. I just don't think their defense, I like them because they have some playmakers, but as you see yesterday, they couldn't really stop Philly either. And
That's
we're seeing almost every week, people just run the ball at will on the Chargers. I mean, at will. I will say this just to give the Eagles something. I like the way the Eagles have played the last 2 weeks. They've stopped trying to be like, oh, we're going to make Jalen Hurts a drop back quarterback. They're playing through the run game. They're using him in the run game, and it led to 176 yards on the ground. I think that's the proper way, but they got to find some ways to tighten up defense a little bit and stop playing so much bend, don't break style to where they just get slowly killed week after week with intermediate to short passing game.
There's one game we haven't touched on. Only one game.
Only one?
Do you have a guess? What that might be. I'm going to look for a headline on the final game.
It was a great game. It was a great game.
Was it?
I don't want to call it the Loser Bowl.
This is Dolphins beating the Texans 17-6.
I don't want to call it the Loser Bowl, but damn, that was the Loser Bowl.
That's your headline.
Well, yeah. I mean, damn. I mean, did anybody want to win the game?
My goodness.
I mean, it was unreal. Every time I looked up, I went, one team was driving.
Nine turnovers. Remember Ferris Bueller? Are you old enough to?
Oh, of course. Classic. Nine times.
They turned it over that many times.
But then he hits the computer and it starts to drop down.
Right.
And he gets all flustered, the principal.
What was the number he dropped it? I think it was 3.
2 or 3? Right.
I think he dropped it to 3.
Yeah, something like that. Something in that category. Ferris Bueller's classic. Like, I've make my kids watch that movie. Like, you got to watch Ferris Bueller. And they
did
love
they?
It.
Did they like it?
They liked it.
All right.
Yeah, yours didn't?
I'm going to go with that. I haven't tried yet.
You should try. It's timeless.
It. Yeah.
That's kid missing school and having fun.
So
that
good.
Translates to any kid.
Right.
What, I can miss school and go fuck around and do whatever? This is a great story, Dad. Yes, it is, son.
And Cameron, you know, trying to get along with his dad.
When Cameron was in Egypt's land. Let my Cameron go. So great. Classic movie. Classic. But, yeah, I mean, every time I looked up, I went, oh, they're moving down the field. Oh, turnover. I mean, Tyrod Taylor had some really bad ones.
Three picks.
Yep. You know, one, you know, in the end zone under pressure, I think on the first or second drive of the game, they leave points on the board. Man, the one we talked about on Peacock show last night where he scrambles to the left and he's going out of bounds.
Yeah.
And shovels it forward to.
That was a wow.
I don't know
that
what he was thinking.
That competed with Stafford getting spun around.
And the Carson Wentz last week.
Going
you're right.
Lefty. Yeah.
That was, yes. That was like a.
We've had some very questionable
full Tropic
picks.
Thunder moments right there.
I mean,
full Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
So that game, you know, again, I don't know if I feel any differently from them. It was a good win. I expected the Texans to win with Tyrod Taylor being back. But again, what you see there, too, is you're out that long, you're not going to be your same self there. Good for the Miami Dolphins, but I don't know. I got no other silver lining or anything to talk about with the game in general to go, well, there was this or that. It was pretty ugly and sloppy by both sides.
We should have a cutoff. Like, if there are combined, like, more than seven turnovers in a game, like, that game
you don't
doesn't
get talked
get
about. You don't get talked about.
You get pushed aside.
Can you imagine turning the ball five times and winning? Like, I've never been a part of that.
It seems
five
impossible.
Five times and you won?
I know.
I mean, that is a shamrock up your ass. Maybe that's what we should have made the headline for this one. But either way, Dan, was that our last game? We got
him
through
the
ball?
That was it.
Look
that was Give Me the Headlines presented by Hyundai. One more little topic to hit. Monday night, Bears, Steelers. Chris said Pittsburgh 20-17. In last Thursday's podcast. Are you gonna come off that?
No, I'm not. I to me, this is the kind of game where I think the Bears will hang around. This is the kind of game like, oh, you want to play ugly football? Well, we that's all we do is play ugly football.
Yeah,
you know, they're very similar teams in that way where it's like, yeah, one's a rookie quarterback and one's a really old quarterback, but they kind of had to manage it a little bit.
It's true.
And I expect this to be a defensive battle. Where, you know, I'm thinking Big Ben will play pretty smart, you know, make a play or two in the passing game.
Yeah.
And I think the Bears will hang around, but I think eventually, like, the Steelers' defense is going to make a play to help them win the game and give the short field to Ben. That's why I say 20-17. So, I don't know. I've had a lot of friends ask me about – I did pick this as one of my best bets, I believe. Or no, I didn't. I left it out. But this is one of the games I've told my friends, like, listen, I think Chicago will keep this close.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh, it is one of my best bets. Okay, good. I can't remember.
How'd you do last week with the picks,
by
the way?
Not good. Who could have done good last week? Those games yesterday.
Who's struggling more, your picks or Patrick Mahomes?
Mahomes, actually.
Mahomes,
well,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not making as much money as Mahomes. He's expected to deliver way on a bigger scale than I am.
Any success you have
when they
is,
start
is
paying
a bonus.
Me $40 million from here, I'll start expecting better picks, okay?
They're not. They're not.
Are you really that shit? Yeah. I can't believe they're not paying me $40 million either. What the fuck?
I think that's it.
That's it?
I think that's it.
That's
you
a
want
show.
To FaceTime? Yeah, there's a show. That's a show.
Yeah, there it is.
Should I FaceTime you like at dinner tonight? Because, I mean, you're going to have to go like a few hours. Without me,
talking to you. Oh, yeah, no, nearby. Yeah. I'll be in withdrawal. Pauly Burmeister withdrawal.
You'll be okay.
I'll be okay. I mean, I like you a lot, but you don't need to call in FaceTime.
However. Wednesday again, though.
Wednesday again. You and me. See, I told you last night you were with me on Wednesday. You didn't know that.
You said three times.
Oh.
You were including last night.
I was including last night. I think
I was wondering what the call was going to be that had me back here doing something for the third time this week.
I'm a dumb blonde and I can't count all the time.
I think that was me. That was me.
All right.
Matt the W. Orion.
Right. Matt the Orion. Yep. Please, Orion, get back to us and correct that for us. We'd like to know.
Orion.
So we can get on.
Please,
Paul.
Let me know.
Please. All right, everybody. Peace out. Send in questions. Wednesday's podcast. We've got a lot of things to break down. I think there's a lot of different elements to talk about.
A lot of ways to go.
Yeah, a lot of ways to go. I'm going to have a my toughest thing is just going to be picking out what we want
to
break down and really show. It is, definitely. But enjoy the Monday Night Football game. You know where to find us. You know where to find me on social media. Thanks, as always, to Under Armour for sponsoring Chris Sims Unbuttoned. Paulie B,
you
the man.
See you
Wednesday.
See you Wednesday.
Peace out, everybody.